it's time for the Des Moines Register on Thursday, March 14. All material heard on IRIS is intended solely for the use of Iowans with a print disability. I'm Twyla Glenn, and my partner at the microphone for the next 90 minutes is Linda Lundgren. For the first hour, we'll cover local and national news from the Des Moines Register and USA Today. Our second hour starts with birthdays and obituaries, followed by opinions, sports, and lifestyle news. We'll wrap up our broadcast with Dear Abby. Support for today's reading comes from the Des Moines Register and donations from individuals and listeners like you. Learn how you can keep the volunteer Voices of IRIS going strong at iowaradioreading.org. Now let's take a look at the weather and headlines from today's Des Moines Register. According to AccuWeather, across the state, we should see a couple of showers today, but a couple of showers and heavy thunderstorms in the south. Winds north-northeast at 12 to 25 miles per hour. And the forecast through the weekend for central Iowa looks like this. Today, cloudy and breezy with a couple of showers. Winds north-northeast 12 to 25 miles per hour and partly cloudy tonight. A high today of 52 and a low of 35. On Friday, it turns sunny. We'll have to wait for Sunday for it to turn sunny. On Friday, it turns sunny with a high of 57 and a low of 41. Saturday, increasingly windy with a high of 58 and a low of 28. And on Sunday, becomes windier and cooler with a high of 40 and a low of 20. Tracking our precipitation in the 24 hours ending 4 p.m. Wednesday, there was zero precipitation. Our month to date has seen 24 hundredths of an inch against a normal of 8 tenths of an inch. Our year to date has been 2.57 inches of precipitation against a normal of 3.28 inches. Last year on this date, we had seen 4.76 inches of precipitation. Still tracking snowfall. In the 24 hours ending 4 p.m. Wednesday, there was zero, and the month to date has seen a trace. Our normal month to date is 2.6 inches. The season to date sees 34.2 inches, and our normal season to date would be 33.6 inches. Sunrise today was at 7:28 a.m. and sunset tonight at 7:21 p.m. Moonrise today, 7:42 a.m., and moonset today? It doesn't. No moonset today. Turning now to the front page of the Des Moines Register, the lead article says a patient is hit with $1,466 in facility fees at Mercy One. This is a story from the Reader's Watchdog, Lee Rood of the Des Moines Register. In other headlines, the Iowa poll shows an expanded Medicaid for moms is very popular. And finally, House Bill sets THC limits and age restrictions for consumable hemp. And now, here with the first story is Linda.
Well, I'll read the story of the Reader's Watchdog. The subtitle, Surprise Charges, covered three visits that totaled less than 1 hour of treatment. Colby Graybill only recently started to grasp the link between his untreated ADHD and depression, and was referred by his physician to a Mercy One psychiatrist last year to get medication to help. He said he went to three appointments from July to October at the hospital's Behavioral Health Center in Des Moines, the first for about a half hour, the others lasting about 10 to 15 minutes. When the 35-year-old father of six finally got bills for those visits, he said he thought surely there had been a mistake. Cigna Healthcare paid all but $20 of the $150 doctor bill for each visit, but Graybill was told he was personally responsible for paying $488.78 in hospital facility fees to Mercy One for each visit. For all three visits, the amount due was $1,466.34. At first, I was in a little bit of a panic, but I just thought it was an error. Something must have gotten screwed up, he said. By the time I realized this was legitimate, I was just flabbergasted. I couldn't believe they would charge me that much. the sticker shock that caused Grable and his wife to contest the bill with Mercy One is being felt across the country. While federal regulations have long allowed hospitals to charge patients a facility fee to offset the cost of providing care, those fees have been increasing dramatically and have expanded from emergency rooms to outpatient clinics, online telehealth visits, surgery centers, and off-campus doctor's offices owned by hospitals and their health systems, healthcare research has shown. From 2004 to 2021, facility fee charges increased by 531%, according to an analysis of industry data from the Peterson KFF Health System Tracker, an online information hub that monitors and assesses the performance of the U.S. health system. That was four times faster than increases to professional fees for emergency department evaluations and management services, which rose 132% during the same span. Hospitals have said facility fees are needed to provide round-the-clock care to patients, regardless of their ability to pay, and that they pay a high price to provide that care. The American Hospital Association says overall median hospital operating margins were negative through 2022 and into the beginning of 2023, and Medicare pays only about 84 cents on the dollar for the cost of care provided to beneficiaries. But facility fees also have become a big reason why consumers are finding it increasingly difficult to pay their medical bills. The fees can far exceed those for the care itself and often aren't covered by insurance. Especially vulnerable are those who need to meet high deductibles before insurance starts to cover some of the bill. Graybill said he signed a form all patients are required to sign before his visits saying he would pay for his medical care, but he wasn't told ahead of time about the facility fees or that other providers not under the hospital's ownership could render the same service without those fees. A federal rule that went into effect in January 2021 requires all hospitals operating in the United States to provide clear, accessible pricing information online about the items and services they provide. The goal was to make it easier for consumers to shop and compare the cost of care before going forward. But getting hospitals to comply with that rule, which is poorly enforced, has been an issue across the country, numerous media outlets have reported. Mercy One, Unity Point Health, and the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics, Iowa's largest medical providers, declined to provide Watchdog with a list of their facility fees or to say where those fees aren't charged. They also did not respond to a question about whether they post anywhere online how much facility fees will be at hospital-owned providers. Watchdog checked websites for all three and found that while fees for some individual services are disclosed, facility fees are not. Neither Eve Letterhouse, listed online as Mercy One's communications director, nor Todd Meisner, its public relations manager, responded to several calls and emails related to the facility fees. Mercy One's website refers people to its insurance and Medicare handbooks to learn what's covered and what's not. It has an online price estimator, but the link doesn't work for Des Moines. UI Health C tells people they will be charged facility fees for rooms, equipment, tests, and labs, but it doesn't say how much those fees are. Instead, it tells consumers online to review their health plans or call their insurers. Kevin Kirkpatrick, spokesman for Unity Point Health, sent Watchdog a statement saying the company provides services and tools that make it easier for patients to understand their costs, pay their bills, learn about coverage options, or get financial assistance when needed. But nothing on its web pages details the amounts of facility fees, and those fees included in the price of procedures aren't included in its self-service cost estimator tool. The Iowa Hospital Association has a service online called Hospital Charges Compare, but that provides only data based on average charges for procedures and services. It's based on what's coded for claims processing. When asked about facility fees, Craig Borchard, the association's vice president of communications, said that if facility fees means charges for an inpatient or procedure room, you'd have to get that from the hospitals. Voters are in favor of requiring transparency in medical billing, eliminating facility fees, and mandating uniform prices for service, regardless of where a patient seeks care, according to the Washington, D.C.-based National Research and Affordable Healthcare Advocacy Organization, United States of Care. A 2023 poll for the group found 74% of voters supported banning facility fees everywhere for outpatient, same-day services, and 81% wanted medical providers to disclose their facility fees up front to patients before they are treated. The poll was conducted by Morning Consult and had a reported margin of error of plus or minus 2 percentage points. In December, the U.S. House of Representatives passed the bipartisan Lower Costs, More Transparency Act, which would require that hospitals, insurance companies, and other healthcare facilities publicly list the prices they charge patients. The bill also includes a reform that would require the same price for drug administration under Medicare at an outpatient setting. The policy, known as site-neutral payment, has been opposed by organizations like the American Hospital Association. Committees in the Senate, meanwhile, also have discussed banning facility fees and instituting site-neutral payment reform. There's a constellation of activity happening and pretty remarkable progress, said Lisa Hunter, Senior Director for Policy and External Affairs at United States of Care. In an interview with Watchdog, Hunter said hospitals have been buying up independent doctor practices and outpatient services at a rapid pace because Medicare for years has allowed up charges for services at hospitals' off-campus facilities. United States of Care's research found that when a hospital acquires an independent physician's practice, the prices patients pay increase on average 14%. There's other research on this with cancer patients or those who receive IV drugs at outpatient clinics, Hunter said. They are hit with 20% more of an out-of-pocket cost. The differential in what is being charged is outrageous. In the meantime, several states have passed measures aimed at controlling facility fees. Some states are banning facility fees for things like preventive services, or some have for telehealth, Hunter said. some states are wading in a little more delicately because the data around this is very uneven and highly variable depending on where you are. In recent years, no one in the Iowa legislature has taken any steps to limit or eliminate facility fees or to make them more transparent to healthcare consumers, she said. Grable said he and his wife are still waiting to see what Mercy One will ultimately do about the facility fees the health system tried to charge him. He said his bills have been resubmitted to the hospital for review. Officials from Iowa's Department of Insurance said they would acquaint Graybill with another new federal law, the No Surprises Act, which prevents insurance companies from forcing consumers to pay too much for unexpected bills in some circumstances. The act, which went into effect in 2022, protects patients from surprise bills for covered emergency out-of-network services, including air ambulance services, but not ground ambulance services, and for covered non-emergency services at an in-network facility. It also protects patients from surprise bills from a facility, such as a hospital or freestanding emergency room, or a provider, such as a doctor, for in-network coinsurance, co-pays, or deductibles for emergency services, even if the facility or provider is out of network. Grable said he would have shopped around had he known three simple visits were going to cost him so much. "I can't believe they are just dumping these huge costs on people," he said. "I don't know how people are tolerating this. I'm still not okay with paying it." Before you see a new provider, ask your insurer if it covers facility fees. If so, ask what portion of those fees will be covered and how much you will be responsible for paying. When your doctor refers you to a new provider or specialist, ask whether the provider is hospital-owned or works for the same hospital health system. When you make an appointment, ask whether you will be charged a facility fee. If there is one, ask if there is another location where you can go where a facility fee isn't charged. Some doctors may practice at a location that doesn't charge one. It's difficult to fight facility fees because they are legal in most places, but you can always talk to the healthcare provider about waiving or lowering the fee. You can also appeal to your insurer to cover more of the cost. For more about the No Surprises Act, you can go to iid.iowa.gov and search for the No Surprises Act.
And in this Iowa Poll Register exclusive, the report says expanded Medicaid for moms is popular. And this is copyrighted by the Des Moines Register and Tribune Company. A majority of Iowans support legislation that would extend Medicaid coverage to low-income mothers in a full year after giving birth, according to a new Des Moines Register MediaCom Iowa poll. But the poll also found most Iowans oppose lowering the ceiling on income levels, which combined would result in fewer women qualifying for longer coverage. Iowa law currently provides low-income women with Medicaid coverage during pregnancy and for 60 days after giving birth, the minimum required by federal law. Governor Kim Reynolds introduced a bill at the start of the 2024 legislative session that would extend postpartum Medicaid coverage to 12 months after giving birth, a policy embraced by most states. Iowa is one of three states that has not implemented or is actively planning to implement 12 months of postpartum coverage for new mothers. Reynolds' bill, House File 2251, was approved by the Iowa Senate last month and awaits a vote from House lawmakers. The Iowa poll found 72% of Iowans favor the proposal to expand postpartum coverage from 60 days to 12 months. 24% oppose the measure, and 4% are not sure. The poll of 804 Iowa adults conducted February 25 to 28 by Seltzer and Company has a margin of error of plus or minus 3.5 percentage points. Postpartum Medicaid extension draws more support from women, 78%, than men, 66%, and from younger Iowans than older Iowans. 80% of those under 35 favor an extension, but support drops to 62% among those 65 or older. The idea also finds greater support among Democrats, 82%, and Independents, 77%, than Republicans, 58%. Poll respondent Amy Weimerslag, 57, a registered Democrat from New Albany, who agreed to a follow-up interview, supports postpartum Medicaid expansion. She believes low-income women should be able to stay home longer to bond with their newborns. As a part-time nurse who conducts wellness checks for Medicare patients, Weimerslag says she often sees negative outcomes in patients who cannot regularly see a doctor and understands the value in helping individuals access routine health care. They need preventive care just like everybody else. When you're a new patient, I think you need a little more support, she said. Lengthening coverage draws majority support in all four congressional districts in Iowa, with the heaviest support, 76%, in the 3rd district, which encompasses central and most of southwestern Iowa. Poll respondents from the 4th district, which encompasses northwest and north central Iowa, are least likely to favor the proposal at 64%. Respondent Phil Murphy, a Republican, does not support extended postpartum coverage, saying he opposes government-funded health insurance in general. A 40-year-old from Hartley believes individuals having children should be financially stable or at least willing to, what he calls, pinch pennies and work hard to support their family. Murphy says he left the hospital the same day his youngest daughter was born to go to work. I've got to pay $1,800 a month for health insurance, but yet the government gives somebody who sits at home or doesn't have a decent job health insurance, said Murphy, who owns a trucking company. To me, that means I'm paying somebody else's health insurance on top of my own because of all the taxes I pay, he added. Under Reynolds' proposal, postpartum coverage would be available to those individuals whose family income is up to 215% of the federal poverty level, or about $64,500 annually for a family of four. That's a lower threshold than is available to postpartum women under the current law, which allows for a maximum family income of 375% of the federal poverty level, or about $117,000 for a family of four. The Nonpartisan Legislative Services Agency estimates 1,700 people each month would lose coverage if the new requirement went into effect. The Iowa poll found a majority of Iowans polled, 65%, oppose changing the income threshold so fewer Iowa mothers qualify for coverage. More than one-fourth, 29%, favor the limitation, and 6% are not sure. Most women oppose lowering the threshold, 70%, and men oppose it at 60%, the poll shows. Views skew somewhat based on political party. The heaviest support for the provision is among Republicans, with 41% in favor of lowering the income threshold. Just over half of Republicans, 51%, oppose such a measure. By comparison, 79% of Democrats and 69% of Independents oppose the initiative. Pam Schelling, a Republican poll respondent from Sioux Center, said she opposes the proposed income threshold because it would harm middle-class Iowans who are struggling to make ends meet. She also believes making it harder to qualify for benefits could incentivize some individuals to quit their jobs to access health care coverage. It seems like the middle class are the ones that are struggling. Some of those bills claim to help the poor people, but really all they're doing is making it worse for the middle class, said Schnelling, a 50-year-old registered nurse. Poll respondent Debbie McCurdy, a Republican from Cumberland, disagrees. While she supports extending Medicaid coverage for some low-income mothers in Iowa, the 71-year-old retired data entry specialist said she... I'm going to another column, and it seems like there's a word missing unless I'm... Okay, let's start this again, see if I can make sense of this sentence. Poll respondent Debbie McCurdy, a Republican from Cumberland, disagrees. While she supports extending Medicaid coverage for some low-income mothers in Iowa, the 71-year-old retired data entry special says that she thinks there should be limitations on how much taxpayer money is spent on these types of safety net programs. There's too much welfare, McCurdy said. I think the government has just become so huge that it's uncontrollable. There are too many things that they expect us to pay for, and we just can't keep up. And again, this is a story based on the Iowa poll, which was conducted February 25 to 28 for the Des Moines Register and Mediacom by Seltzer & Company of Des Moines. It's based on telephone interviews with 804 Iowans ages 18 to older. The interviews were conducted in English and were conducted in households with randomly selected landlines. Linda?
House bill sets THC limits and age restriction for consumable hemp. Iowa House lawmakers approved a bill ramping up regulations on hemp products Tuesday, capping how much THC can be contained in consumables and imposing an age 21 requirement to buy them. House File 2605, which passed on a 78-16 vote, imposes a limit of 4 milligrams of tetrahydrocannabinol, which is THC, per serving in a consumable product, and no more than 10 milligrams per container. The bill also ramps up regulations and penalties for violating Iowa's existing hemp possession, sales, or manufacturing laws, and prohibits synthetic THC. And consumable THC products would be required to have a warning label, much like alcoholic products. Representative Steve Holt, a Republican from Denison, the bill's sponsor, said the changes to Iowa's hemp laws were necessary to regulate the availability and potency of consumable products. It is a bit of the wild, wild west out there in Iowa right now, thanks to the loopholes we did not know we created, Holt said. Democrats said they were concerned that the regulations would hamper both local businesses that sell THC products and Iowans who rely on them for medical reasons. This legislation will make it much more difficult for people in the state of Iowa, said Representative John Forbes, Democrat of Urbandale. They're going to go out and buy this stuff online. They won't have a business that they can go into. Representative Falls warned that upward of 1,100 retailers in Iowa could be affected by the rules, and that container potency limits and warning labels could spur some national providers to avoid shipping products to Iowa and send consumers across state lines. They could go to Minnesota, they could go to Illinois, they could go to Missouri, Kressig said. Holt urged for passage of the regulations that he said in hindsight should have been included in earlier law. In the legislation we passed, there were no provisions for age requirements precisely because we did not believe or have any idea that there would be a need since we had limited the THC, Holt said. We were not approving THC to be used in intoxicating products, or we would have added age restrictions. The bill now heads to the Senate ahead of a Friday legislative funnel deadline. A previous version of the bill that contained stricter potency limits spurred online advocacy efforts by one local vendor. Climbing Kites, a line of THC-infused drinks developed by Lua Brewing and distributed by Big Grove Brewery, wrote in a social media post this week that the legislation would, quote, gut Iowa's hemp market. From the small business retailers to producers, suppliers, and consumers, this devastates the work we've been doing, the brand wrote on Instagram. If having access to 2 milligram plus matters to you, take the time to have your voice heard. Climbing Kites cannabis-infused sparkling water drinks contain varying amounts of THC, several of which are above the 4 milligram threshold in the bill.
And that concludes the front page stories from the Register. We'll turn now to the Metro in Iowa section of the paper. And we'll begin with this story. Bill would ban citizen police review boards. A handful of cities in Iowa would be required to disband their citizen police review boards under a bill advancing in the Iowa legislature. Senate File 2325 states that cities with civil service commissions, which include any city of more than 8,000 people, may not, quote, establish a board or other entity for the purpose of citizen review of the conduct of police officers, end quote. The bill would eliminate citizen review boards in Iowa City, Cedar Rapids, Coralville, Dubuque, and University Heights. The legislation makes larger changes to the rules that govern civil service commissions, which cities use to approve hiring, promotion, and discipline for law enforcement officers and other city employees. Representative Jerome Amos, Jr., a Democrat of Waterloo, opposed the bill. He said he believes it's important for citizens to have a voice in what goes on in their communities. The direction that this is going is taking citizens and their voices out of the equation, he said. Representative John Dunwell, a Republican of Newton, said keeping the authority to review police misconduct cases with civil service commissions will create a healthy process. I'm hoping we can accomplish what you're talking about, having that citizen input and making sure that there's transparency, he told Amos, and that's part of what hopefully the Civil Service Commission could do as well, he added. Skylar Limkeman, an attorney for the Fraternal Order of Police who helped write the bill, told House lawmakers at a March 7 subcommittee that part of the aim of the bill is to standardize the disciplinary process for law enforcement officers and place it solely under the authority of city civil service commissions. We in Iowa don't have any regulations over any civilian review boards, so each city that has one tends to have a completely different process, purpose, and it's kind of run amok, he said. And unfortunately, what we've seen really since 2019 and 2020 is just a continual attack of our law enforcement officers by some of these civilian review boards, said Linkeman. Betty Andrews, president of the Iowa-Nebraska NAACP, called the legislation extremely concerning. The NAACP has helped push for citizen review boards in several cities that currently have them in place. We believe in transparency in law enforcement and government, and that citizen review boards are an opportunity for a fair look in making sure that our law enforcement knows that we as citizens are watching, Andrews said at a news conference Tuesday at the Iowa Capitol. So it's an important opportunity to bring balance and to also just make sure that things are operating properly within law enforcement, she said. The bill also changes several other rules for how civil service commissions would operate in Iowa. The bill states that an employee with civil service protections could only be removed, discharged, demoted, or suspended with just cause after a finding that the employee violated a law or city policies or rules. It gives both the accused party and the Civil Service Commission the power to issue subpoenas and engage in discovery of information as they would be able to do so in court. Doug Strike, a lobbyist for the cities of Des Moines and Iowa City, told lawmakers during the House subcommittee that adding subpoena power to the Civil Service Commission process will drag out what is supposed to be a quick process. "We believe that it will take these procedures, these hearings, and turn them into a much larger, basically a court proceeding," he said, "albeit not tried in front of a judge, but definitely increasing the length of time and expense that's supposed to be an expedited process here to address the concerns between the employee and the chiefs," he said. Kelly Patchick, a lobbyist for the Iowa Peace Officers Association, said the current civil service is stacked against an officer who is fired or disciplined, and that adding subpoena power would even the playing field. "Civil Service Commission is appointed by the city, chosen by the mayor, and the officers have no say who sits there. And then the city is represented by the city attorney, and the commission is represented by the city attorney, and we can't do any discovery to defend ourselves," she said. "What would go wrong?" she asked. Under the bill, I should have read that more ironically, because I'm glad that I'm sure that she said that. "What could go wrong?" she asked. Under the bill, commissions would have would have to be between 5 and 7 members, up from the current minimum of 3 members. The city attorney's office would not be allowed to represent the Civil Service Commission in instances when a city employee is appealing a disciplinary decision. Instead, the city would be required to pay the cost of an outside attorney for the commission, and city employees who win an appeal would be allowed to collect attorney fees from the city.
Unity Point begins work on mental health expansion, and this article is accompanied by an artist rendering of what the building would look like. It's lovely. It's got 2 stories, lots of windows. The sidewalks are blocked off on Pennsylvania Avenue on Des Moines' Upper East Side around Unity Point Health. The Eyerly Ball Roosevelt Clinic at 1319 Pennsylvania Avenue is what this building is all about. The Unity Point Ball, Eyerly Ball, is preparing to centralize mental and behavioral health services in Des Moines into one building. The Eyerly Ball Roosevelt Clinic will be a 16,800 square foot, 2-story facility near Unity Point's campus on Pennsylvania Avenue, a few blocks north of East University Avenue. It would replace Eyerly Ball's 2 Des Moines facilities on Center Street in Oak Ridge and 19th Street in Sherman Hill. The Center Street location will serve as an administrative building, while the 19th Street location will likely be sold, CEO Cynthia Steidel Bishop told the Des Moines Register in December. The new mental health care facility will house all of Eyerly Ball's client-facing services and have its own pharmacy, the first time the mental health provider has had an in-house pharmacy, Steidel Bishop said. The clinic will be open 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Justin Bailey, an architect with Envision, told the city's Plan and Zoning Commission. A surface parking lot to the east and a row of shared parking on the existing campus will serve the site. So when will this work be done? Though the project's timeline has changed, Unity Point spokesperson Karen Bennett said it's still expected to open in early 2025. Site grading will begin soon, with the foundation to be poured in April. Construction is slated to wrap up by the end of December. And how much will it cost? A building permit valued at $7.4 million is currently under review. Lastly, why is it needed? The move will allow Eyerly Ball to expand its offerings, including mental and behavioral health care services for children. Mental health care providers have seen a surge in demand for their services in recent years. The advocacy group NAMI Iowa said that, historically, About 1 in 5 Iowans was affected by a mental health condition each year. After the pandemic arrived in 2020, officials now put those estimates closer to 1 in 4.
The Department of Natural Resources land purchase measure hits a snag. The Iowa Department of Natural Resources would be forbidden from bidding on land at auction under a bill in the Iowa legislature that faces opposition from conservation groups. Senate File 2324 would block the Iowa Department of Natural Resources, known as DNR, from purchasing land at auction. The DNR would only be allowed to buy or acquire land from a willing donor or seller. The department would not be allowed to acquire property from a nonprofit that purchased the land at auction. The bill advanced through a 3-member House subcommittee Tuesday, but it was not brought up for a vote in the full House State Government Committee on Wednesday, potentially killing its chances of remaining alive past Friday's second legislative funnel deadline. Representative Austin Harris, a Republican of Moulton, said some of his fellow Republicans shared concerns about the bill with him, so he decided to pull it from the committee's calendar. We'll see what future avenues exist moving forward, but today we're just putting a pause on the bill, he said. For bills to survive the second funnel, they must pass a full chamber and through a committee in the opposite chamber. The bill passed the Senate February 28 on a 30-17 vote. But Harris on Wednesday declined to say the bill was dead for the year. Nothing's ever dead in this building, he said. A coalition of conservation groups showed up at Tuesday's meeting to speak against the bill, saying Iowans want more public lands. Republican supporters of the bill say it codifies current DNR policy. Harris argued the legislation sets out a fair policy for farmers, and he accused opponents of using what he called scare tactics to rile up opposition. At the end of the day, I'm not going to let the scare tactics work, he said. I believe with all my heart that this is good policy that was created by the DNR. This bill would not change a single thing. It does not threaten public lands any more than the current policy, he added. The legislation follows several unsuccessful years of efforts by the Republican-controlled legislature to limit the DNR's ability to purchase land for public use or accept donated land. Anna Gray, public policy director for the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation, says her group opposes the bill. She said she views it as a distraction from other priorities lawmakers could focus on to strengthen Iowa's outdoor recreation and conservation opportunities. We see it as adding unnecessary restrictions to landowners and on landowners who sell their properties, she said. And it will result in a lot of missed opportunities to strategically protect land, regardless of how significant the public benefit might be, she added. Kevin Cooley, a lobbyist for the Iowa Farm Bureau Federation, was one of two people to speak in favor of the bill Tuesday. He called farmers what he called the original and best stewards of the land. In the past, our farmers have had concerns about government dollars competing against farmers for land purchases, he said. We appreciate that the state has stated that they are largely not competing for land, and we appreciate that the bill brought forward would codify this practice, he added. Representative Austin Baith, a Democrat of Des Moines, said urban sprawl is a far larger threat to farmland than purchases by the Department of Natural Resources. He said at the rate the DNR is currently buying land, it would take them about 200 years to increase the amount of public lands in Iowa by 1%. Our farmers concerned about 200 years from now losing 1% when development urban sprawl is growing at a clip of 26 times that, Baith said. Let's define what our problem is. If there is a problem, and go after that, he added. According to the DNR, about 1% of Iowa's land is public land controlled by the DNR. Over the past two decades, Iowa has lost nearly 1.8 million acres of farmland to development and other uses for a 5.5% decline, according to the latest U.S. Census of Agriculture. Nearly 586,000 farm acres were lost in the last 5 years. Representative Derek Wolf, a Republican of Hudson, the third member of Tuesday's subcommittee, supported the bill.
Lawmakers want to lure Hollywood back to Iowa with tax credits. Iowa lawmakers are weighing a bill that would give tax credits for the film industry in an attempt to lure studios and bring the Hawkeye State back to the silver screen. House Study Bill 731 would allow for studios producing bigger budget projects in Iowa to receive a 30% rebate for qualified spending in a two-year pilot period from 2025 to 26. The proposal comes years after a previous iteration of film credits in Iowa was plagued by scandal and led to years of court battles, $26 million in improperly distributed credits, and seven convictions. Representative Brent Segrist, Republican of Council Bluffs, said he believed the new proposal clearly takes care of any lingering concerns with oversight remaining from Iowa's last stab at the program. "I think it's going to be potentially a very successful effort," Segrist said. And Representative Brian Best, Republican of Glidden, recalled watching Field of Dreams and feeling so proud of Iowa. Several film groups and studios testified in support of the tax credit program Tuesday. Jennifer Kingland with the Clear Lake-based studio Renovo Media Group said she had seen Iowa passed over for projects in favor of states that do have tax credits, including one film that originated from the Iowa Writers' Workshop that ended up filming in Kentucky. Lawmakers suggested several tweaks to the existing program, such as lowering the minimum budget for a film to qualify for a rebate. Currently, the minimum stands at $1 million. Representative Chuck Eisenhart, Democrat of Dubuque, said Iowa could help establish a growing film industry at home with changes and carve-outs to the bill. "Part of this bill needs to be about growing a native filmmaking industry," Eisenhart said. The bill earned bipartisan support in a subcommittee hearing Tuesday, though lawmakers face a Friday deadline to pass it through the House and on to the Senate floor in order to survive the session's second funnel deadline.
Two Des Moines 1040 WHO hosts exit the morning radio show. Max and Amy have held an early slot since 2021. Two on-air hosts for Des Moines News Radio 1040 WHO will no longer host their morning slot. Maxwell Schaefer and Amy Sweet, who have greeted 1040 WHO listeners, which is self-described as Des Moines' news, traffic, and severe weather station, in the mornings following the retirement of longtime radio morning show host Van Harden in 2021. But recent social media posts by both Sweet's and Schaefer's wife, from Schaefer's wife, and an interview with Justin Brady of the Iowa podcast indicate iHeartMedia, owner of the station, has parted ways with the duo and their Max and Amy in the morning show. iHeartMedia has not immediately responded to the Des Moines Register's request for comment. Schaefer confirmed he was no longer on the show in an interview with Justin Brady of the Iowa podcast published on March 12. "Let's suffice it to say sometimes in business people move in a different direction and we lost our driving privileges," he said to Brady. Sweet shared her appreciation for WHO listeners in a Facebook post on March 9, crediting them for making it possible for us to build upon a rich tradition and excellent programming that sets us apart from other stations. "We have truly enjoyed connecting with each of you through various initiatives designed to foster deeper connections within our beloved community," the Facebook post read. "As we move forward into unknown territory, we're filled with anticipation and hope for what lies ahead," she added. wife of Maxville, Karen Schaefer, said he loved hearing from listeners and being on air in a Facebook post on March 9, but that iHeart has decided to part ways. He will miss being on in the morning and the afternoon on the bus and working the Iowa business to promote their products, read the Facebook post. It concluded, here's to new adventures. Schaefer and Sweet's history as co-hosts go before their time at WHO. The duo previously co-hosted a KIOA morning show for more than a dozen years. The station parted ways with Schaefer in 2018, and the radio personality joined WHO later that year. Both Schaefer and Sweet have decades of experience in radio. Sweet, a native of Sway City, began her career at Des Moines at KKDM, hosting the morning show for several years. Her career took her to Las Vegas to a CBS affiliate, and she returned to Iowa to work with the Des Moines Radio Group. It's not immediately clear what is next for both Schaefer and Sweet, or what iHeart plans to do long-term with the morning show.
There are two small articles that finish the Metro section. I will read those. Police ID a 30-year-old killed in a single car crash in Des Moines. Des Moines police on Wednesday released the name of the man who died in the city's first fatal car crash of 2024. Jonathan A. Ruiz, 30, of West Des Moines, was transported to a hospital in critical condition and later died from his injuries after being involved in a single vehicle crash on Sunday, according to the Des Moines Police Department. Des Moines police officers and firefighters were dispatched to the intersection of Indianola Avenue and Pine Avenue around 10:48 p.m. to investigate the crash. First responders found two people injured, including Ruiz and a 13-year-old passenger, the news release said. The passenger was transported to a hospital with minor injuries. Police did not say how the Ruiz and the 13-year-old knew each other. Investigators believe Ruiz was traveling westbound on Pine Avenue at a high rate of speed, attempted to make a turn, and crashed into a utility pole where the car rolled, according to the news release. Police still are investigating the crash. And the last story, All Iowa Auto Show to feature second annual EV summit. Prospective car buyers will get a chance to do some one-stop shopping at the All Iowa Auto Show, March 15th to 17th at the Iowa Events Center. The event, held by Local IQ, a division of the Des Moines Register's parent company, Gannett Company, will be in Hy-Vee Hall at the Iowa Events Center. More than a dozen manufacturers will show off their latest vehicles and offer test drives. Electric vehicles will be highlighted during the second annual Electric Vehicle Summit at the Auto Show. An estimated 1.46 million electric cars and trucks were sold in the United States in 2023, a 50% rise from 2022, and made up 7.6% of all vehicle sales, according to USA Today. As of June 30, 2023, there were 12,805 electric vehicles and plug-in hybrids registered in Iowa, a 19.5% increase over the total on December 31, 2022, according to the Iowa Department of Transportation. Iowa received $51.4 million from the 2021 federal bipartisan infrastructure law to upgrade its electric charging infrastructure. Funds are being distributed through grants, and the first chargers are being built along Iowa's interstate highway corridors. The EV Summit starts at 3 p.m. each day and includes presentations from local dealers and groups promoting electric vehicles. On March 16th, Polk County leaders will talk about the impacts of gas and electric vehicles on the country's environment. The show is open from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m., March 15th and 16th, and from noon to 6 p.m., March 17th. Admission is free. March 17th will be Family Day.
And that concludes the stories from the Metro and Iowa section. Returning now to the interior of the front page section, primary wins set the stage for Biden and a Trump rematch. President Joe Biden clinched the Democratic presidential nomination in the 2024 election on Tuesday night after winning primary races in Georgia, Mississippi, and the Northern Mariana Islands. The incumbent president won his second nomination, surpassing the 1,968 delegates required to secure his spot as the presumptive Democratic candidate. Meanwhile, former President Donald Trump secured the presumptive GOP nomination late Tuesday in Hawaii's Republican presidential caucuses. With 98% of precincts reporting, Trump had 97% of the vote. With wins in Georgia, Mississippi, and Washington state as well, Trump surpassed the 1,215 delegate threshold needed to become the presumptive Republican nominee, setting up an all but certain rematch against Biden in November. "We are facing a sobering reality," Biden said in a statement Tuesday after winning the nomination. "Freedom and democracy are at risk here at home in a way that they have not been since the Civil War. Donald Trump is running a campaign of resentment, revenge, and retribution that threatens the very idea of America," he said. Biden's victory comes after the House Judiciary Committee released the full transcript of his two-day interview with special counsel Robert Hur last October regarding his handling of classified documents. Transcripts showed that the president told Hur that he did not purposely keep the classified information after his tenure as vice president ended. Biden will not be the official Democratic nominee until the DNC delegate votes this summer. The Democratic Party has 4,672 delegates in total, and the presidential nominee must win the majority of delegates at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago in August to officially secure the nomination. DNC Chair Mignon Moore celebrated Biden's win and encouraged Democrats to rally around Democrats' vision of a free and fair America and support the Biden-Harris tickets, she said. The latest win for Trump comes after the Republican National Committee laid off more than 60 people on Tuesday. Last Friday, the GOP frontrunner installed three allies, including his daughter-in-law, in top roles after suggesting that former Chair Ronna McDaniel step down. He will formally accept the nomination at the Republican National Convention in July, by which point he could be in the remarkable position of being both a presidential candidate and a convicted felon. Trump has been indicted in four separate criminal investigations, and his first trial, which centers on payments made to an adult film actor, is set to begin March 25 in New York City. Looking forward to November, Trump said, "We now have to go on to victory because our country's in serious trouble," complaining about the border and the economy and claiming the U.S. has what he called no respect on the world stage. He added, "For this evening and for this week and for all the weeks before, for the tremendous success we've had in this primary, I want to thank everybody. But much more importantly, we have to get work done to beat Joe Biden, the worst administration, the worst president, and in the history of our country," he said. And before we go to our birthday music, this one short item from USA Today's 50 States Roundup, based in Iowa and not covered elsewhere in the register. This is datelined Perry, where more than 1,200 workers at another Tyson Foods plant will soon be out of work. The company announced it is permanently closing its facility in Perry.